What's the game-changing realization that helped you build a high-performing team? That question is at the center of every episode of the HR Impact Show. Every HR professional wants to build a team that has empowered managers, engaged employees, and an organization that's striving to become elite. The challenge is that you're often told to do more with less. We're going to fix that. Every week, we will feature executive and senior HR leaders from across the country, and they will share with us their actionable insights and best practices that's going to help empower you to create an engaged, elite workforce. Here's the show.
Hi, once again, everyone. My name is CT from Engage Rocket, and welcome to the HR Impact Show, where we talk all things about building elite teams. Today, I have in our studio Ron Storn. He's the Chief People Officer at Truckstop, and it's a great pleasure to have you with us this morning, Ron. Welcome.
Thank you, CT. I'm really happy to engage in this conversation with you.
Ron, for those of us who don't know, tell us a little bit more about Truckstop and what you do there.
Sure. So Truckstop is a marketplace for moving goods. So we have a load board, which is basically a matching vehicle for brokers and carriers, which are drivers, to take loads and move them efficiently. So brokers put the actual goods that need to be delivered on our board, and then there's algorithms that match the carrier or drivers to get the load and deliver it in the most efficient way. So it is very technology driven. And we also have a couple of other products, but that's our main product that is expanding and growing as we engage the e-commerce upswing that is about to happen.
So you're matching, basically, you're connecting that 3PL chain in an easy way for both the people that are going to be distributing the goods as well as people that are selling the goods.
Exactly. And we're based in Idaho, but we're very remote or oriented, and we're about 800 employees now. So I've been at the company for about 10 months. Part of my remit was to elevate the HR function, modernize it, because the company has been around for 25 plus years and it's private equity owned. So it's been a very exciting time, and it's going to continue to do that over the next few years as we continue to really grow and scale the company.
That's awesome. I love that phrase that you use, elevate the HR function, and you were brought in specifically to do that in a 25-year-old company. Tell me a little bit more about that. What does that entail?
You know, what got us here to where our growth is not going to get you to in the future. So you have to really think about how to put tools, systems, and operate differently. A lot of companies have different views on what HR is. I really think that no matter what function you're at, you have to be business first and your function second. And that's no different from HR. What I mean by that is you have to think about how HR fits into the construct of how you're going to meet your goals as a business, how you're going to meet your revenue goals, how you're going to meet your EBITDA goals, and then what those outcomes are. I have a little bit of a unique background where I started my career as a CPA at KPMG. So I have that foundation of business, and I try to bring that into the HR function. When I think about elevating HR, the number one thing that I don't see HR folks do, which I try to do, is really talk the language of the CEO. If you talk about performance reviews or you talk about employee experience and so forth, that's good and nice, but how is that going to affect the impact on the business with the CEO? And so if you think about it, what is the number one cost and the number one asset of every company? What do you think that is?
For most companies, I'm going to say it's the people.
Correct. People. So it's the biggest expense and it's the biggest asset that you have to work with. The CEO, no matter what decision they make, there's always a financial component and a people component. If HR is not in the room to help you understand all the dynamics from a cost structure, from a productivity structure, it's going to impact it. So if HR is not in the room, you're missing a big piece of the stool. You can have the right roadmap, the right vision, but if you don't have the right person in the right role at the right time, you probably will not succeed or earn the right outcomes that you have. And so you have to earn this trust with the CEO. But again, if you come in with that mindset that you're entrusted and a big partner to that biggest asset and the biggest expense, how do you talk about those types of experiences and language with the CEO? So that's what I mean about elevating HR, is really talking about it from a business lens first and how critical what HR does is going to impact the business.
Taking that effort up front to understand how the business works, where every dollar of investment actually turns out into a return for the business. I think that's super critical for anyone in any function, especially for HR, where there's pretty much a large cost base, a huge 50 to 70% of OPEX in most cases are people costs. So correct, we got to figure that out. So you've been on the job for 10 plus months. How did the first 90 days look like for you?
The first 90 days, what I usually look at is develop that rapport and relationship with my CEO, who we have a very great relationship. And then also go on a listening tour of what's worked at Trexup in the past, what the culture was like, and then have a thesis of how you can improve it. So I tried to accelerate that a little bit and meet some of the leaders in the organization, as well as what our business drivers were, and got an understanding about, we're talking about the load board, like what's important from a technology standpoint, from a product standpoint, from a revenue standpoint, and what are the gaps that we have? Because if you come in and say you have all these benchmarks, you have all these things you want to do, that will fail. You have to understand where the company's at, meet them where they're at, and then move them forward accordingly. So you can't come in like gangbusters. You have to really assess. The first 30 to 60 days is I was really assessing, and then came up with a strategy and a framework for the people team, but then also talking with my CEO, Kendra, about what are the other gaps that we have in the organization. And so one of the things that came front and center is that we had some good leaders that got us here, but they haven't seen the scale to double revenue and double our EBITDA in the next 3 years. So a lot of my time has been partnering with Kendra to hire our next CRO, our next CFO, and our next CTO. As of this recording, we have two of the three. That's exciting, and that's great, because building that muscle across the board is going to be really important. And again, stressing on how can HR not just focus on HR things, but help with the business, meet the goals, meet the requirements. A lot of it I call is like the operating rhythm of the business. What are your weekly business reviews? What are your monthly business reviews? And how we engage each other as an exec team and so forth. So some of that is still in motion, but we put some new things in place that I think is going to really help us get to that doubling of revenue in 2 to 3 years.
If you were to describe, when you're thinking about elevating the HR function and aligning it with the business objectives, what does, at the end of those 90 days, and then even for now, what does success look like for HR?
Success is like having that strategy of what you're going to put in place from a people standpoint. How are you going to hire the best talent? Because some people can grow with the organization to get you to that next doubling of revenue, or you might have to up-level some of the talent. Finding out from an HR standpoint, we really didn't have an understanding of what our talent looked like. We didn't have competencies. We didn't have job architecture. We didn't have anything that connected to how good or not good our individuals were. So we're in the process of putting that in place, but we started figuring out, okay, what's the best way to accelerate this talent? How can we assess our talent? And then how can we have the right experience? Because values are very important in most companies. So it's not changing the values, it's resetting or evolving the values. What it meant, the values in the early days, you have a different definition now and how you grow. That's difficult, especially if you've been around 25 plus years, there's a certain way of operating. And so you have to show individuals that if you're changing operations, if you're changing how the culture is, you want to have impact. You want to show that you're working with smart people, that everyone in their job is going to really help Trexup get to where they want to be, and you're connected to the mission, vision, values of a company. One of the things I look for in all my days, and I started with my first HR leadership role at Lyft, is how do you connect your customers to employees? So what we're about to start doing is these truckers, the carriers, most of them are really owner operators. They're like one or two trucks. So they're small businesses. They're dependent on us doing the work in order to match them to load so that they can put food on their table. And so at town halls, anywhere we can, have someone or some owner operator come and talk to the company, and it gets us fired up about how we have impacted their lives, and it makes your employees more connected to what we're doing. That's a couple of the resets that we're trying to do right now.
I love that. You're building that connection with everyone who's doing the work, with the customer, and ultimately how that value is generated. It's such a powerful thing that it's not, I guess, traditional HR. And what I like about it, it directly connects your people with the business and the customers, which is ultimately what we are trying to solve for. I like how visceral and human that is. And there's that human touch to HR that you clearly have. At the same time, you're also a CPA, and you're also responsible and put in this place to calculate ROI on what would traditionally be HR initiatives, like performance reviews and development and all of these different processes that are being run, or the employee experience, for example. How do you think about that?
Sure. We're having like a North Star goals or metrics for each organization in the company. The CEO, Kendra, is setting the North Star metrics for what we want to do as a business, but then each org is doing that themselves. So from an HR standpoint, every org has to have goals that can be measured. That's one big thing. Whatever you do, you have to measure it so you can improve it and see if it's working or not working. There hasn't been a lot of measurements in the company before, so you have to really start somewhere, right? Meet where you're at and then start inching forward and moving forward as quickly as you can. In performance, we've never had a performance review. We just had one and we did it in a lightweight way. Exit, off track, and on track. Three categories. If people are not performing, they need to exit the business. If they're off track, can we develop a plan for them? And if they're on track, they're doing really well. So to start this up leveling, every manager should hire someone who has better skills than them. That makes a great team. It's not everything that you know. You need to surround yourselves, and I need to surround myself with people that are better than me in different areas. So to measure this, we're saying 6 months from after they start or the next performance review, are they on track? And if we get to 80 to 90% of them on track, we have up-leveled the team. So that's one measure. Again, it's a simplistic measure, but it's somewhere to start. The second one is, we're going to talk about this a little bit later in the podcast, is about managers. They are so crucial to what we do. And what we're trying to do is then have a pulse and an understanding of, are the managers impacting their business and productivity in the right way? And what is their manager effectiveness? Effectiveness meaning from their directs, from their peers, and their performance. So having a number, you take an old culture survey, what that number is, and then increase that by 5 to 10%. That's the second numeric metric. And then the third one is about attrition, because everyone has attrition, right? Especially if you have hourly workers, there's probably more attrition in hourly than not. But what's key is tracking regrettable attrition. And regrettable means that if that person leaves, there's a business risk and something is going to suffer. And so a goal, a metric to have for that is that of all the people that leave, less than 10% are regrettable. So those are initial ways of doing it, the HR way. But to go a little bit further about how to track performance, so engineering, we have about 16 different pods, different teams that are working on different things. What I'm trying to do is get every business leader to really calculate the ROI of their pod. What's the efficiency? What's their productivity? What's their output? Because if you have a more mathy type of equation, you can have a baseline of where you are and where you want to go. That's something that we're doing now. Some of the leaders already have that. These couple of leaders coming in also have that. So really being very thoughtful, what you're doing for the business, is this the highest and best use? And will this develop the ROI for the company? So it's a process, but I really think it's important for all companies to do this, because that gets that connection of how people and the business can work together.
That's super interesting. So one of them is being able to look at performance at the individual level and look at improvements over time, and getting to a specific North Star that everyone's aligned with. Then we have the second piece, is the manager effectiveness piece, which we are going to dive into. And with regrettable attrition, we're looking to get it down to at least 10%, because each person that leaves that shouldn't is costing the business a significant amount of resources. And on top of that, that whole infrastructure where every business unit is forced to think through very deeply how they are contributing. Let's use engineering as an example. Do you need these 16 pods to align in their definition of ROI, or does each pod come up with their own metric?
So I work with the engineering leader, has metrics for all the different pods, and they might be a little bit different, because some of the pods might be working on tech debt, or they might be working on enhancing what we have. And others might be connected to revenue. This new pod is working on something that's going to be incremental revenue. So there's consistency across it, but there might be a little bit nuances depending on what that pod is working on. But it's really important. I just want to add one thing. From a recruiting standpoint, a lot of times it takes a lot to hire an engineer. And one thing to tie to the business and tie to productivity is, say, measure how many hours of engineering recruiting time does it take to hire one engineer? Say it's 45 hours. A goal that the engineering team should have and that the people team should have, reducing that time to hire of 45 hours per hire to 40. If you do that, that 5 hours per hire is huge. It's not real dollars, but it is quantifiable dollars. Those engineers are working on product that's going to deliver revenue or efficiency. That's another way of connecting HR to the business, showing how much opportunity costs you gain back or opportunity of time you gain back so that you work on the business. Again, HR is starting to do a lot of that, but I think if you're very diligent and vigorous on this, it's going to really help the whole company accelerate that theory about business outcomes.
That reminded me about Andy Grove, who wrote High Impact Management. So he was the CEO of Intel. And one of his personal philosophies about designing metrics was that you almost want to have antagonistic metrics. Reducing the amount of time to hire is great, but you also want a quality indicator after they've been hired, like maybe how long have they stayed, right? So if you match these two together, you're really getting efficiency if you reduce the amount of time and they continue to stay or stay even longer.
Yes, exactly. Stay longer and their performance is at a certain level as well. No, 100%. That's the secret sauce of all of this too. And the other thing that a lot of people get hung up with, which I would recommend changing, and my CEO is very good about this as well. You have to start somewhere. So you have to develop a baseline and then measure progress. But what the best outcome is should not be internal metrics. It should be external metrics. Because we're early on, our internal metrics, we might meet them, but we're still far away from the external metrics. So you have to have a push and pull on what are the right benchmarks, what are the right metrics to use. Because I think you're selling yourself short if you're only trying to improve incrementally on where you are versus what great companies are like. That's very key, is to think about both. But eventually, you want to adhere to what the best benchmarks are.
Let me dive a little bit more into that. Like, typically, we would create certain benchmarks from the industry that we know internally we want to track and live up to. Do you go through some kind of exercise where you connect these with the external metrics and then adjust how the internal metrics should be tracked?
Yes, we are in the process of doing that. So for instance, regrettable attrition, like I said, 10% is what we want. Right now, we don't know what regrettable is. So in order to measure it, say the internal yardstick is 20%. 20% or less should be regrettable. I think that's too high, but we've never measured it. We don't know. Let's set something in the short term, do a pilot on that, then start setting what the 10% is. And so this 10% metric that we're talking about is by the end of the year. It might be a little bit higher in Q1, Q2, until we start getting to know it. But ultimately, you want that good benchmark externally, but you have that internal to pilot and adapt and see what works and what doesn't work. Because if people haven't done this before, it's hard to really get to that external benchmark right away.
Yeah, that makes sense. So you start out with shorter cycle activities that you track against the internal benchmark and then see if that creates progress. And then the moment you see progress, you then double down on that until you get to the external benchmark.
Exactly. And what I find, hitting your internal benchmarks, people claim a lot of success over that. That's great, but that's not the end goal. That's like the first step of the journey. And sometimes people forget connecting it to the external benchmarks. Again, it's a culture shift. It's a mindset shift, and it takes time. It's not going to happen overnight.
So when you do reporting on everything HR to the senior management team, to the board, how much are you in a position to show the ROI on HR activities? For example, we've just done this massive job leveling exercise, for example, and it saved us X amount of time, which translates into whatever. Is that something that you find yourself able to do yet, or is that something that is still aspirational?
It's coming. We are improving that because we didn't have the right tools to do that. A lot of it's been Excel spreadsheets, but now we're starting to develop more of the tools. So what the goal is to have an HR dashboard that measures all these things. Maybe it's not real time, but on a regular basis. But what we've been highlighting to the board is, here's our goals, here's our strategy, and then have them come along with you to say, are you doing the right things? And then they're excited to see what the outputs are. So it's still a little bit too early to really measure it, but I think that's the way to go.
Yeah. And I know many organizations are on this journey. That's the holy grail. It's very messy and difficult to get to. As long as we're making the right steps and making progress towards that, I think that's incredible.
What we're trying to use is the same type of dashboards and tools that the company is using. So it's not just something for HR. It's something that the whole company can use and just use it differently for your specific org and how you measure things.
Sometimes in HR, we have our own HR systems. And no one else in the business cares or even knows what these are.
Exactly. If you can see every org in the company-wide tool, that's much better. And that's what we're working on now.
Okay. That's super cool. Now I want to touch a little bit on the manager piece, because when we think about everything we're doing in HR, the activation points in the organization, what actually translates everything that we're trying to do in HR into active behaviors and actions and changes in the organization, it's that manager. How do you think about manager effectiveness and how do you drive that in the organization?
You're spot on. If you look at the stats out there, 75% of people stay or leave because of their manager. So the manager is the center point of everything that you want to do with individuals. Managers, a lot of times you're a great individual contributor and you have great skills there and they go, okay, now your next step is being a manager, but they don't give you the tools to do that. Being an IC and then being a people manager is so different. And so what we found here, a lot of people have good intentions, but they didn't know how to be a good manager. What I've done, and we started doing this at the end of 2023, was develop a manager accelerator program. Develop cohort groups of about 15 to 25 individuals that, as an executive team said, we have to carve out time so they can learn these fundamentals. And so it's a workshop that is an hour and 20 minutes every week, totaling 16 hours. It goes for about a couple of months. Sometimes it's every other week, sometimes it's weekly. But what it is, it's live, in-person instruction, and then you get to role play it as well. But there's five key things that we focus on for each of these cohorts. And one, which is the biggest thing that I think a lot of companies don't do, know the business. And what that means is, how do we make money? What are our products? What do our financials look like? Even if you're not working directly on any of those, I think it's important that you have to have a baseline of what the business is. How are we succeeding or not succeeding? And I think that most companies do a poor job of it. They do a great job at leadership, but not all the way down. So we're doing that first with the managers, and then eventually we're gonna train everyone on how to know the business. The second piece of the manager accelerator program for the managers is deal with ambiguity. How many things are gray? Most things are not black and white. So how do you juggle your time? How do you deal with someone who has an issue at home or an issue at work? All those things are crucial. How do you do that? The third critical piece, I think, is planning and prioritizing. Most managers, they feel like they want to do everything instead of really prioritizing what's best for their team, what's best for their org, what's best for the company. Having a toolkit and a framework of how to do that. The fourth one is communication. How do you communicate effectively? Especially if you've never managed before, you know what works for you, but there's really very rarely a one size fits all. You have to understand your team and adapt how you communicate. And then the fifth piece is really, how do you develop others? Because like yourself, you grew to a manager at one point. How do you take a person that has high potential and institute some of these manager attributes in order for them to be successful and have a good transition? What this does is create a plan for each. So they have this context. So everyone is talking the same language. It's across the entire organization. And then you can sit down with your manager and put together a plan of how you're going to operate it. We're in our fifth cohort. The ratings from it are off the charts. It's about 90 to 95%. People love it. And most people don't love training. But when you can role play it, when you can hear it, and you're with your peers, it's really powerful. And so this is step one. Step two is going to be, how do you develop more nuanced skills? But this is like a foundation for everyone to build. And even some of the first cohorts, they're using some of these techniques with their teams, and they've seen an uptick in engagement or productivity that they haven't had before. Again, it works sometimes, it doesn't work other times, but I think having this foundation is so important. Just as like you said, they are the center point of what activates all employee productivity, engagement, and everything about them. So that's what we're doing. It's the first part of the journey. I recommend every company, you have to focus on the manager of one of your first steps as you join an organization.
That's incredible to hear. In my experience, one of the hardest things to do with convincing organizations to do what you guys have been doing is that the investments in managers, you're going to see some immediate changes on the ground.
Right.
The lag for transmission into actual ROI might take some time. There are a lot of confounding factors. How did you go about even implementing this? It's a decently large investment because you have to take people off the floor to attend the training. You've got to put that all together and then you've got to follow up.
After that listening tour that I did, one of the things I talked with Kendra about is that we have a lot of gaps. We don't have skills that are needed to scale the company. And one of the framework that is put in place right now is that we need to operate differently, meaning we have to develop repeatable, scalable processes. our productivity in 22 and 23 in terms of how we had new products or how we evolved and modernized the technology stack was very slow. And so what that meant was we either didn't have the right skills or we didn't have the right managers. But you have to start with the managers, and most of them have been here for a little while. Kendra, her role was a CRO, then COO, and then became CEO. So she's seen some of this. So helpful that she saw some of the deficiencies before. But when you bring to the table saying that the stats about 75% stay or leave because of the manager, and that we really haven't evolved over the last couple of years, knowing that we need to do this in 2 to 3 years, that investment is going to pay for itself pretty quickly. So taking all of that data and presenting it to her, she was very bought in, and then got the rest of the team bought in as well. And then as we're trying to find these new C-level folks, that was a big part of it, is how do you accelerate change in a very thoughtful way? And a lot of it is the managers.
Cool. I'm going to dig a little bit into the HR aspects of this. How do you go about selecting people to enter these cohorts before they become managers, or shortly after, or both? And at what level of organizations?
The first cohort is people who are already managers, and it's managers all the way to the top. So one of our executive offsites, the executive team went through this in a very quick one-day format to just understand what it is, so that we had this understanding of what the language would be and so forth. So that was number one. The second one about the cohorts, what we did is we went to each of the different orgs and said, we have 25 slots, nominate your top two or three that you want to go through first. So the leaders helped create which managers and directors and so forth should be in it. And again, we limited it to 15 to 25. We had that cadence to do that. And also, once one manager goes through it, maybe they're a manager of other managers, we tried to get a cross-section of each org, each level, and so forth, so that they can still help put that in practice after that cohort was done. It really was having the first team, the executive team, go through it first, and then have them select which priorities. Again, some managers might be working on more significant projects versus more of maintenance projects. And so having them select it made more sense than having HR select it. But HR is the one that's curating this and then helping drive the discussions. And eventually we're going to put in V2 of what the next leg of training looks like.
And how did you go about designing the 5 pillars, designing the language around this?
So me with the executive team, asking what are the key things that you think are missing from our managers and our leaders today? And one of the common themes was about business. No one really understood the business. They only thought about their own section and not broadly. And then communication, because a lot of projects are cross-functional, and there's always a communication gap between different teams or different orgs on the same project. And so communication, the understanding of the business, and then the development piece. We were not seeing a lot of internal leaders growing. It was more coming from the outside. So at the executive team, we came up with these themes and buckets. And then myself and my team went through, put the language out there. What is the goals that we're trying to achieve? And we found an outside vendor versus us doing it ourselves to actually do this. And so the outside vendor took what we had, did a draft, we approved it, and then started rolling it out.
Very cool. If you could boil everything down into kind of a framework or a North Star for yourself, how do you gauge your own progress and where it is that you want to go? How would you describe it?
For an overall North Star and assessment of where we're at, I think by the end of 2024, we've increased our productivity by 10%. If we've increased the talent that we had by more than 10%, because last year we didn't meet all of our goals. And if we meet 90% of our key overall company metrics, that will be success. So it's meeting most of the company metrics, that productivity uptake, and then also talent up-leveling, that's going to be success, because all of this has to work together. It can't be separate. And also what it boils down to, there's two big metrics that we're looking at. Can we hit our revenue metrics, and can we hit our EBITDA metrics? If you have those three big broad buckets, but then specifically revenue and EBITDA, that will be success. If we hit some of it, it's still great momentum and progress, but it's putting this infrastructure in and just getting that buy-in from everyone that's really going to help. And that progress just tells us how far along we are on that spectrum.
I love it. I think you must be the first HR leader I've spoken to about defining success in revenue and EBITDA.
Again, what the company has to win That's how everyone wins. If you're not aligned to that, and it's tricky because some of it are direct to revenue and EBITDA. Others are indirect, like HR is very indirect to it in most cases. So how do you try to figure out the metrics to do that? And even for other orgs, the same type of thing. Legal, how does legal directly influence that? It could be like how to get through contracts and understand what the right contracts are for customers and things of that nature. So you just have to make sure that you get that business mindset in every piece of the org.
Absolutely. Thank you so much for hanging with us today, Ron. I've learned a lot from our conversation. And if anyone wanted to contact you to follow up and ask any questions that they have from this episode, what's the best way for them to reach you?
Reach out to me on LinkedIn. Definitely a very responsive and a LinkedIn user. So that's probably the best way to do it.
Wonderful. Thanks so much, Ron. And thank you all so much for listening to the HR Impact Show. My name has been CT from Engage Rocket. If you want to hear more content like this, head on to www.engagerocket.co/HR Impact to download more content and more lessons from other HR leaders. It's been really fun hanging out today, Ron, and all of you. Thanks so much.
Thank you.
Thanks for listening to this episode of the HR Impact Show. We hope you liked the conversation. Don't forget to continue supporting us by joining the HR Impact community. You can find the community at www.engagerocket.co/HR Impact. Tune in next time where we'll have another guest who's going to share with us the game-changing insights that help them build high-performing teams.